And now I think that first one I did is when I was like, whoa, okay. I think we hit the jackpot. Mm-hmm.
You are investing 15 G's, getting 200, yeah, 300.
Yes, yeah.
15 G's.
Yes.
Okay.
So at that time, the calculation was about 2M mm-hmm. to start my brand. And so for 4 years, I literally didn't, there was no money coming to me. There was no, we didn't even make profit.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Financially Incorrect. We're getting closer and closer to the Christmas period. I hope you have your Christmas plans ready. I hope they're exciting. I hope people have good gifts ready for you. I think last week we had Marek, in fact, both weeks consecutively, because we had Marek and we had Frankie Just Jimmy both talk about the fact that they love experiences. You know, you tell us, what are your favorite Christmas gifts? What are you looking forward to for Christmas? Have you had a sinking fund throughout the year, or are you now dipping into your budget and now, you know, ruining your January experience? And if I'm not wrong, this goes out the week that people get paid, because, you know, people get paid before earlier the week of December. So don't go finish all your money this week and then, you know, be in trouble. Anyway, so today I want to see if I should read a comment or two. I'm going to read a few comments from the behind the scenes video that we put up about how, I guess, Financially Incorrect comes together. So I will read from Maricia Tisa. I love this podcast. Always looking forward to new episodes each Friday. I think I have told everyone I know about the podcast. You have no idea how my, oh, this is another one. Sorry. Aluraya 82002. Amazing content, guys. There's a guy, Michael Migwi, laughing at, you know, one of the FXPress employees thing I did on my TV. I'm going to leave, well, one more. You have no idea how many lives you are changing. Looking forward to work with you in the future. Okay, I guess looking forward to working with you too. Yeah. So those comments from I guess a YouTube episode that's been up. Today we have with us Chris Njoki, who's the founder of Icon, a fashion housing store in Nairobi, Kenya.
Yeah.
I have 3 stores and 1 outlet.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Who's also an influencer in the digital space. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. You are Chico really wanted to have you here.
Really?
Actually. Yeah.
That's my girl.
Yeah, hey. She really wanted to have you here. So she sourced for...
Wait, didn't you?
I wouldn't... You know, that's a difficult question. I have wanted to have many people here. Yeah, I think I'll answer it in that sense. But yeah, so looking forward to having this discussion.
Thank you.
Let me ask you first. What did you do for... Christmas last year or the year before? Question is, your favorite Christmas memory, whether childhood or adulthood, your favorite Christmas memory?
So that's interesting. So I'm not really big on holidays.
Okay.
I'm just not big on holidays, not big on birthdays, but somehow everybody around me is. Mm-hmm. And so I just have to, like, you know. Mm-hmm. And so my most memorable Christmas, I remember, I think I was about 13, and we had just moved into a new house with my parents, and I remember it was a big enough house, and what happened is every holiday we would have, and these are school holidays, so every school holiday we'd have my cousins from my mom's side and my dad's side, they would all come the entire holiday for a month, and we'd all stay in the house, and what my dad would do is he'd give the boys one room and the girls one room, and we'd all sleep on sleeping bags, and the house was, like, kind of unfinished, so there was just, like, the walls were not even painted. It was just, like, a big old camping thing, and so I remember this one time they came, and it was over the December holidays, and I remember around our house we were the only building, like, structure, and everything around was forest and coffee farms and just plantation. And so at that time, I don't even think we had power in the house. I think we used to use, like, lamps, you know, one of those, like, solar lamps, a bunch of them. And so you have around 15 kids, all between the ages of about 9 to maybe 14, 15. And my dad was basically in charge of us. Honestly, I don't even know how this guy had energy, but we were all there and he'd give us things to do every single day, like chores, and it was just so much fun.
It has to tire you out, yeah.
Yeah, and then now during Christmas, our job was to go hunting for a Christmas tree, and we actually went into the farm, like all around in the coffee farm, and went into the forest. And we all found a tree and we literally chopped it down and carried it home.
Was it an actual Christmas tree or was it just a tree?
It was just like one of those fun-looking trees. Right, it has the shape of a Christmas tree. Right, so it was like that. And it had this. And literally we popped popcorn and we used that to like hang around the tree. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was just such a lovely experience. And for me, it's like if I had to have a Christmas, I would want it exactly like that.
Yeah.
And if it's not like that, I don't want it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds like a good memory.
That was a cool Christmas. Yeah, that was a cool Christmas.
Are you a new year, new me kind of person?
Yeah, I know. I feel like every day for me, like every morning is like a new me.
Gosh. Okay.
Is that, that's worse.
I feel that worse? It's the same thing, just on a larger scale. But I guess my question is, what are you looking forward to in 2024?
I think for me, what New Year signifies is mostly when it comes to business. It's a time where you can come together as a team, make goals, and then see how you can smash those goals. Mm-hmm. So not necessarily new year, new me, but it's like new year, new goals. Let's see what, compared to last year, how can we make this better? How can we push more and earn more and do more? So,
If you, this is a bizarre question. If you could change the way that as humans, we calculate our time and essentially, I guess, mark, you know, a year long or a day long, what would you change about it?
About time?
Yeah. Well, no, not time, because, you know, time is time, but in the way that we document and keep track of time. You know how, for example, like in Ethiopia, they're still in, I think right now they're in like 2000. They're on a different calendar altogether. Right. Yeah, like, you know, if you could change the way that we calendarize our time, what would you change?
Wow, that's such an interesting question. I've actually never thought of ever wanting to change how we view time. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think maybe what I would say, I wouldn't want to see this construct of like day and night so much, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know it's part of our body and biology that we need the darkness to sort of rest. Mm-hmm. But I wish there was a way we could still, you know how you have these 24-hour economies? Mm-hmm. Like, I wish there was a way we could just normalize working hours where people could just work 24 hours and then you decide when you want to rest. Not that you have to work at this time because that's when everybody else is doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the only thing I'd say, but yeah.
Okay, interesting. All right, so let's get into it. And I guess we start at the very, very beginning. What kind of household did you grow up in with regard to money? Was it plentiful? Was it privileged? What kind of space did you grow up in, or was money like, and what did that do for your understanding of money?
Okay, this is a good question. I feel like growing up, my parents were very, and they still are, they're very strong. They feel very strongly about saving, okay? Mm-hmm. And so even now, you know, definitely growing up, I didn't feel privileged, but then they did certain things that made me see that, okay, we are definitely better off than others. And so they really had priorities. So when it comes to things like housing or schooling, you know, they really made sure to, you know, give the best. But then in terms of spending, it was just mere. Honestly, like we probably went out to eat as a family, like once every year. And out to eat, I mean even like a chicken inn, like basic, right? My mom was always the "we have food at home" mom all the time, right? And even in terms of good things, toys, things like that, honestly, I didn't really have many toys. And I didn't care for them, but I don't know if I didn't care for them because I couldn't have them. But definitely all these extra things, I didn't grow up knowing that. But I knew that my parents were very cautious. They did it intentionally. So they would save. Like them, they just save, mm-hmm. that life is just mm-hmm. saving. And my dad would tell me that all the time. It's like, you see, when I got older, he started telling me, you see, all these things we have is because we save. So you need to save. You know, like, that's always been the speech. Mm-hmm. How it's affected me, I think there was a bit of rebellion now coming from that. Because mm-hmm. then for me, I'm the opposite, where I'm just like, you know that saying, tumia pesa ikuzoe.
I've never heard that before, but I've heard
what?
It now.
Oh my goodness, tumia Justin. Pesa
ikuzoe.
How does he not know that?
Do you know that saying?
Yes.
I've never heard it.
It's like a famous Kenyan saying.
I've heard of the you know, the burning the pocket.
It's similar to that, yeah. Tumia pesa ikuzoe, and so that's that was.
I've had awezi kosa pesa na watoto at the same time.
Yeah.
I haven't had that one. Yeah.
So that was, I think, my rebellion against the whole saving culture mm-hmm. that my parents had drilled into mm-hmm. my head, because now I didn't. Growing up, I never experienced just like small lifetime like pleasures, you know, mm-hmm. just like going out for a coffee or mm-hmm. having lunch with a friend every so often. Mm-hmm. You know, something small, or just like taking a trip on a whim. Mm-hmm. Like, I never got to experience that. And so I think when I finally got into money, that was my, you know, way of sort of fighting back. Mm-hmm. Even if I was old enough, I wasn't really having to fight back mm-hmm. against mm-hmm. my parents. Mm-hmm. But I think mentally, I just wanted to see that it's possible. Mm-hmm. Like, I shouldn't just have to live in this life of nothingness and just like save. I get it. Okay. It's to like buy a big house, like mm-hmm. do all these things, or just like, you also need to enjoy the everyday, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah, so that's basically where it got me.
All right, so I mean, yeah, so as you're growing up, I mean, you're talking about your parents saving and you guys eating out, you know, once a year.
Yeah.
So pocket money, was that a rumor? Did you get any pocket money even for the chores that you were doing?
Or right, was that like... I see. So first of all, there was no money for chores. My dad didn't believe in that. It's like, the chores are your responsibility as a yeah. child. So if you don't do these chores, Connie, who's going to do them?
Yeah.
I've never, unless it was the time when my siblings were super young, mm. like from 0 to maybe 2, mm. that's the only time I ever remember us having help.
Okay.
We never had like a house help or like a gardener.
Really?
Like, that was our role.
Okay.
As kids and even my parents. And that's the thing. It's like, it's not that they'd be here sitting and be like, oh, you guys do this. Mm-hmm. Like, my dad used to be in there and we were doing the chores together with my mom and everything. And so I don't remember. We've never had a wochi mm-hmm. ever. I think we had a wochi once for about like 6 months. And my dad was
so
like,
what would
God
happen when
us.
All of you were...
He literally used to say that.
So what would happen when all of you were out of the house?
Everyone has a key.
Ah, I see.
Yeah. Okay. And you find your way back with
but
the
what
key.
If you come back and then someone has the key in the door?
There was ways, trust me, my dad thought about all this stuff. Like, so he constructed everything such that you're able to like come in and
so you used to wash your own clothes?
Yeah, so we had a machine, you learn how to do your laundry. You learn how to do your laundry, you hang it up yourself. If it's ironing, you decide if you're ironing or if you're wearing crisp clothes. Like, literally, we just learned how to do stuff by ourselves. Yeah.
And the pocket money in general?
So the pocket money, that's a funny story. So actually, the pocket money, I think for me, is what really like grew me in mm-hmm. my young adult life. Mm-hmm. Because I remember the time now when I really needed pocket money. First of all, there was no pocket money before I was 18. Like, for what?
Before you were 18?
Yeah, there was no, what do you need money for? So there's food in the house and you're going to school and you're coming back. Also, I was in boarding school.
So between 0 to 18, like you're saying, in terms of like meeting friends outside?
So then he'll give you money for that.
Okay.
You know, and at that point he's like, okay, how much is a soda? So you're like, okay, a soda is 15 bob. So he's like, so see, 30 bob is okay.
Two sodas.
Yeah, and it's like, but you know, transport, it's okay, I'll drop you. Mm. You know, and like, he'll drop you and he gives you money for the two sodas and you come back. And so very early on, I had to get smart mm-hmm. with ways of getting money. And so when I started getting my allowance, at that time, I just finished high school. Mm-hmm. So then I was getting into college, into uni. And so even then, the pocket money I was getting was literally enough just for my transport. Mm-hmm. And maybe just like a little bit for just like extras. Because I remember even when I was in fashion school, mm-hmm. my pocket money per week, I think was about, was it 2,000 bob? Mm-hmm. Okay. And transportation from home to my school, mm-hmm. a round trip at that time was about 300 bob. And I was going to school 5 times a week.
Mm-hmm. So it's 1,500.
Yeah. And then 500 just for like whatevs. And so, you know, if it's things like, oh, I don't have enough for food, it's like, there's food in the house, just carry packed lunch. Mm-hmm. whatever question or trouble you had, he always had like retaliation. And so even that time now, I had to get really smart. You think about, and this is for everything. So even things like shopping, if I need to buy like girly things, whatever, that's all encompassed in that.
In the 1500.
Yeah, in the 2000 per week.
Yeah, 2000. Yes. Yeah.
Mind you, I'm in fashion school. I need to look good. Yeah. I need to look cute. So I was like, okay, all my friends are going shopping in all these stores. I literally have 500 bob to my name. So if you compile in a month, I have 2K, right? And so that's how I very quickly found out about secondhand and Gikomba. And that's why I used to do my shopping, you know, and I still used to look good. And it just made me so creative in ways of getting money to where I feel like right now, I can just tell you with confidence that there's no way I will not be able to make money. Like, yes, I'm not saying actually I'll be balling and whatever, but I'll always find a way to make money.
So, okay, so this sounds more like, I mean, in terms of the 2,000 shilling, the 2,000 per month that you have extra, it sounds more like, you know, managing money and saving and you know, budgeting for it and whatever.
Yes.
So what were the ways then that you went out of your way to then make more money so that you have more than the 2,000 bob a month at that time? If there was anything you were doing. That
So what happened now very quickly at that time is when I was still in school, I started going shopping in Gikomba, and I used to get, you know, super cheap clothes, 10 bob, 20 bob. And I realized very quickly that I also was good at selecting stuff in the second-hand markets, open-air markets. And so I was like, okay, not everything is my size. Maybe I can start selling. And I quickly opened up a Facebook page, and I would get, as I'm going shopping for myself, I'd also buy. And I remember that's literally, it's the story of how I started Icon. Is I started with 200 shillings and it pained me because that 200 was like my shopping for the month. And I was like, okay, instead of buying it for myself, let me just go buy four dresses. And I bought four dresses, each was 50 bob. I opened up a Facebook page. I borrowed my mom's camera. I took some pictures in my bedroom and I put them up on Facebook and I sold each for 1,000 shillings.
From 50
bob. From 50 bob. And I was like, okay, all right, this is not bad. And at that time, I think I was in my second year of uni. So I was like, cool. So I slowly started building this business on Facebook. So every time I go shopping, so I started getting more money, more money. And even when I finished fashion school, I didn't start my brand immediately. So now I really fully fledged opened this business. And I did that for about a year and a half, compiled my cash and then started the brand.
And when you make this sale and, you know, for 4,000 shillings, the four dresses, what are you more excited about? About the fact that you have 4,000 shillings now? About the fact that you've multiplied your investment from 200 bob to 4,000 bob? Or the fact that you seem to have an eye for fashion? What's the thing that excites you the most at that point?
So for me, the thing that really excited me was just the compiling that could happen, like the possibilities, right? And, you know, at that time I'm looking at it, I'm like, okay, so if 200 could become 4,000, how much can 4,000 be? And then how much can that like 10,000 be? And now I'm looking at it, I'm just like, my eyes are getting bigger. And so that's literally what used to fuel me. You know, I'd have school at maybe 9 in the morning. I'd wake up at 4 a.m., be in Gikomba at 5 in the morning, do my shopping, be done at around 8, send the stuff back to my house, to my parents' house, and then I go to school. And I come back after school and I'm there like doing the laundry for these pieces, ironing them, because in my head there's just all these numbers compounding. So that for me was the excitement. It's like, oh my goodness, I'm going to be rich. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember what you did with the 4,000 shillings, the first 4,000 shillings? Do you remember how you spent it?
Yeah, I put it back. I bought like more dresses. All of it.
Okay.
I bought more dresses.
So you didn't spend any of it.
So I'll tell you when I started spending it, right? So I didn't, because that's the thing. It's like, at that time, I was still in school. I was still living in my parents' house. You know, I was eating at their house, whatever. So I really didn't have expenses. And then also, I thought, okay, I have this fear. Now, coming back from this sort of upbringing I've had of like scarcity, in my head, I'm like, okay, I don't want to spend it. And then I never have any more, you know. So let me get like a nice, healthy amount. And then I can maybe start spending. And so I didn't spend for a while until I finished fashion school. And then I went into that business fully. That's when now the big money started rolling in. So I remember there was a time I really used to do these car boot sales. And I'd do them over a weekend. So I'd
car boot sales. So you're where are you pitching up? Where are you parking? Is it like
so literally it's like an open air thing, and then you pay to be there. So you pay maybe like 5K or 10K, okay, depending on the event.
So it's just like what people do at the malls, but in a parking outside, lot
yes,
now, right?
Yes. Okay. And then if you don't have a car, they'll give you a tent. Okay. I remember I invested in like racks and all of that. And so I'd go shopping, and then I come for the car boot sale Friday to Sunday. Mm-hmm. And now I think that first one I did is when I was like, whoa, okay. I think we hit the jackpot. Mm-hmm. Because in those car boot sales, in a weekend, I would easily make between 200 and 300K. Mm-hmm. Right? That's one weekend. Mind you,
and how much
like
have you
20.
Spent to make that 200?
So I've done shopping of about maybe 15K, mm-hmm, right? 10, 15K. So at that time, you know, I'm like, what, 20, 22? Mm-hmm. You know, 22, 23, give or take. Now, that's the first time, like, it was like, okay, whoa, okay, this is big money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, I think in my head, I still knew I wanted to start my brand. Mm-hmm. But then I was getting convinced that maybe that brand is not what I need. Like, mm-hmm, this is the business that I should be in. Mm-hmm. And so the first time that happened, I remember that money, I spent like half of it. It was a Sunday. Mm-hmm. I called my friends. I was like, yo, guys, you don't even know. So I put all of it on my M-Pesa and we just went out and I bought like everybody drinks. You know how it is. And I think that went on for about like the next 6 or 7 car boot sales that I did.
You are investing 15 G's, getting 200,
yes,
300.
Yeah.
15 G's.
Yes.
Okay.
And almost every weekend, you know, because then these car boot sales, they do one at the end of the month, one in the beginning
of
the month.
Where are these car boot sales?
They don't have them anymore. They don't have them anymore.
Like, okay.
I haven't seen any around.
Where were they happening? Like, literally, where were they?
There used to be one that I was going so many times at Adams Arcade.
Okay.
So in Adams Arcade, you know, they have the parking lot there. Yeah. They used to have one there all the time. There's another one they used to have at near Yaya. Right now it's a restaurant, but there was a time they have a big field and they used to have a market there. There was one I did at CBD parking lot. You know the one at GPO, like where all the cars park on the side?
Yeah.
They used to have one there.
Yeah.
And so I knew all these like car boot sales. Yeah. And you know, at that time you're young. I remember even I'd be out like on Friday night, get home at maybe 4 a.m. in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I'm out at like 5, 6, 7 just to go for my car boot sale. And I'm hungover. My head hurts. But I'm like, no, we need to make that. You know, and I'm just like suffering. I'm suffering. And I'm telling my friends, guys, please come and just bring me like a milkshake or something. Like, I'm dying. And I'm solo, like one-man machine. But in my head, I'm just like, we need to make this. We need to make this one. And so, yeah, we did that for about a year and a half.
Sorry, one question. How long would it take you, and what was the investment when you're looking for these clothes? How long would it take you to find these clothes? Is there anything in particular you're looking for?
Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, because it got to a point, and it's good you've actually asked that, because it got to a point where I was like, okay, how do I scale? Can I get somebody to like maybe look for the clothes with me so that we can do double with less time, blah, blah, blah. But then I tried that and I realized it's actually like a skill. So when I go to the market, there's like a huge pile of clothes. Somehow I'm able to just like pinpoint very quickly before I even go in to pull things. I can see, okay, that's good. And I can just pull and 90% it's something good, you know. And so I tried going a couple of times with some people. I tried training, but it would take too long. They just didn't have the eye. And for me, I would just like see it and I know, okay, this one, it just needs like a zip fixer or we can just like cut the length and it could be cute or we do this, you know. So some of them I used to alter. How long would it take? I think the shopping, I generally go like twice a week. So I'd go morning. So there was the market days. Usually Tuesday morning was great and Thursday morning was great. Shopping generally would go from 5 a.m. and I'm done by like max 9. Okay. So about 3-4 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
So and then, about 8 hours a week in terms of shopping.
Yes.
Okay.
And then I even got a plug there where there was someone who would do the laundry for me in the market. So they'd wash it. After washing, there was a guy who would do the ironing. So by the time they're coming to me, and then I have the riders. Like I did it for a while, so I had a whole network there. But the time that clothes are arriving to me, they're like all steamed, pressed, smelling good, you know. And then now the selling is just over the weekend, you know. So we used to do the car boot sales twice a month. And then every other time was on Facebook.
Okay.
So I built up a Facebook page. I remember, what was the name? I forget. But a lot of, actually a lot of Icon customers know me from that time. They always remember like, oh my God, do you remember when you used to have this page? And then I remember even now when I was starting out, that was the difficult part because even trying to get these products to the customers was, I didn't really have a system. And so it took a lot of time. We used to have pickup days like on a Saturday. And I would literally sit at, what's his name, Archives, with just all the packages there. And I'd tell
waiting
guys,
for people to come and
waiting for people to come and pick. And I'd tell them, okay, picking time is from 9 to 2. And if you're not here by 2, you just have to wait for next week. And so I did that in the beginning for about like 3 months. Then now I started getting stores around CBD to drop the packages. So guys would go and pick from there.
Yeah. Okay. So you were talking about the fact that, you know, these the car boot sales thing that you were working at, you did that for about, you said 1.5 years?
Yeah, I did that for about 1.5 years. Yeah.
So, and are you also equally spending the money you're making as quickly as it's coming in?
No, no. So you see, I did the, there was the initial high of, whoa. After about 6-7 of these highs, I realized, okay, now we need to go back to, we have a goal. And I remember at that time, when I was still at crossroads on whether I'm starting my brand or not, I remember my dad had a conversation with me and he's like, you know, this business you're in, I know you can see that it's making money, but it's not sustainable. You really don't have control. Those are also the times like randomly, like you come out, catch on fire, and then you can't get some products. He's like, it's not sustainable. It's great. The ROI is impressive, but that's not why you went to fashion school. And so at that point, I was like, okay, yeah. So I set a target. I knew this is how much I need to start my brand.
How much was that, how much you needed to start the brand?
So at that time, the calculation was about 2M to start my brand. And so I just said, okay, I'm just going to hunker down. Once I get to 2M, I have no excuse. I just have to stop and start my brand.
And the, if you can break down for me, the 2 million shillings, what was being factored in the 2 million shillings?
So for me, yeah. So for me, I was initially looking at cost of machinery. Actually, I didn't even look at machinery so much because I was looking to produce somewhere else. I didn't want to do the production myself. And so I was looking at initial cost of production, which was the biggest cost. It was coming to about maybe almost half an M. And then cost of raw materials. And then I still wanted to get some machinery just so that we can do some things locally. And then there was also the cost of accessing this, the people who are going to do the manufacturing. And so initially I thought I would do it here locally, but then I didn't find anyone locally. And so I had to sort of go outside China and find it there. So all these costs now are part of the 2M.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you work, you keep doing the car boot sales, work at getting to your goal, and then you hit your goal.
Yes.
And at that point in time, is this where all your money is going? Are you looking at anything else in terms of savings? Everything is going into this, into this 2 million goal.
Everything. Yeah. All of the money in my name just like was that.
Yeah.
And it just went like that was, it was my dream. And right, I think at that time I was like so fixated and so naive about my dream to where it's like there was nothing else.
Okay. And I was like, so what happens after you hit your goal?
So I hit my goal. And then I do exactly what I'd set out to do. So I try to find a manufacturer. I didn't get any in Kenya. Went to China, found somebody there after a lot of like hassle. So the first thing actually that really struck me when I got there was the MOQ. In my mind, I just thought, yeah, I'm a designer from Kenya. You can do like 100 pieces. They're like, no, no, no. The MOQs were like 10,000 pieces. So very quickly, I was like, hey, okay. So after like really struggling, we found Uko like in the like up country there. We found a small manufacturer who was able to do MOQs, still not small. I think it was 500 per style, which was insane because I'd left, I'd left the country. I didn't even have, I hadn't registered the business. I didn't even have a business name. Like the name Icon was an idea, but not really like set in stone. I remember I did our Icon logo on the street in China. I just literally found a shop there for printing things. And I went in and I like drew on a piece of paper and I said, and then right down there, I said, write Nairobi. And then the guy just printed like the tags. And, you know, I went and I remember even when I was going to the manufacturer, I remember I spoke to my mom and I was like, oh, I can't even find like anyone to produce. And she's like, no, you have to find something. You can't have gone all the way there and come back with nothing.
Yeah.
So in my head, I'm like, okay, yeah, I need to. And so that's why, yeah, I got the guy. The MOQ was still pretty high. 500 per piece. And I remember I had, 500 per style. Mm-hmm. And I remember I had six styles. Mm-hmm. I had six styles. And so, yeah.
And how much was that going to cost you now?
Now, everything. Like, I remember the production plus, because for them, they were giving everything. Production, raw materials, everything. Mm-hmm. I think it was all coming to about, I think it was like 1.5. Mm-hmm. Everything. And I was like, awesome. So then I did the deposit, and they said it should be ready in a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, cool. So there was the interpreter who I was with. Mm-hmm. She's Chinese. So we had the agreement that she would go maybe like once or twice to go check up on the production,
mm-hmm.
and then send me videos, pictures, whatever. Because mm-hmm. this place was far. It's like
mm-hmm.
4 hours drive mm-hmm. from mm-hmm. the center, yeah. the city center. Yeah. And so we agreed that. And then now me, I came back to Nairobi. So I was like, cool. So now when I got back, I was like, cool. Now game on. Registered the business. Nini. Sole proprietor. Put the name. I even opened up now like a store in Jumia, because I was like, this is where we're going to start selling from. Sorry. And then created the Facebooks, the Instagrams, all of that. And so a month passes, and then I'm told the items are ready. The chick had been sending me videos and pictures, mm-hmm. and so I was like, yeah.
And during this month, are you still doing the Kabul sales? Are you still...
We're done.
Oh, like you're no longer... Done. The minute you got the 2 million, you were
like,
I'm done.
Yes, I was like, I'm done.
So how are you making money in this time?
See, there's just the two monies that were left. There's really no... Also, I'm in my parents' house.
I see.
Me, I'm just waiting for like my big, Yeah, and so I remember now what helped is I'd gotten like, I think, 2 sewing machines, and I'd also come with some fabric from my travel.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just fiddling, mm-hmm. whatever, nothing serious. Anyway, so yeah, I'm told the items are ready. You need to settle the deposit. The chick tells me, yeah, we have the items. Oh, we've counted. They're good.
Mm-hmm.
Finish the payment. Mm-hmm. I did. And then now they shipped everything. It came, I think, like a couple of days later. And so I remember that day, it was a Saturday. I was so excited. I was like, oh my God, my items, Nini. And I remember they came in like huge boxes, mm-hmm. 4 of them.
Mm-hmm.
4 huge boxes, almost my height. And I was so excited. I was like, oh my God, man, this is it. And I opened the first box. And I remember I took out the item from the first box and took it out of the wrapping. And I looked at it, and this thing was like completely different from what you had agreed with the mm-hmm. manufacturer. The color was there, the style was there, but the fabric was crap. Like, mm-hmm. it was terrible. It felt like polythene paper.
Mm-hmm.
The zip was like getting stuck. It was bad. Like, basically, I could not sell it. It was unsellable.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, so that's my entire life savings then. And I was
How old were you at this point?
I was 20. How old was I? That was about 8, 9 years ago. How old was I at that time?
Yeah,
damn. I'm about to show my age. I was 25.
Okay.
Yeah. I was 25. And so I was like, okay, cool. I remember that weekend, like, I cried so hard. I just felt like my life was basically just like
mm-hmm.
over.
So none of the things that they had brought in was sellable.
Like, it was all just crap. And so I remember now on Sunday, after crying my eyes out, I didn't even eat. You guys, I was just like depressed. I was so depressed,
mm-hmm.
you know. And my mom came on Sunday and she was like, look, like, I understand this didn't go the way you wanted. And I know your money has gone down the drain, whatever. But I'm giving you until a certain point to stop crying and like get your shit together.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me when that should be. And I was like, okay, by tomorrow. Lunchtime, I'll be okay. She's like, cool. I'm like, Monday lunchtime, I'll be good. She's like, sawa. So I'll come Monday lunchtime, and you better be good. And yeah, Monday lunchtime, I had to just be good.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, get your shit together. You have a job to do, and I think despite everything that's happened, you can find a way.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, that's literally what I did. I just got some of the fabrics I'd come with from my trip. Started working on a new collection. At that time, I was literally the only one. I had no one on my team.
Mm-hmm.
I stitched everything by myself. And it was ready in about 2 weeks. And I got one of my sisters to be the model. I was a photographer. I did like a whole photo shoot. I did, and then I had the lookbook. So now the lookbook, I sent that to everybody I knew in fashion at the time, emails and all that. And yeah, everyone was just like, oh, we regret, but it's cute, but yeah. And I remember at the time one person responded. She was doing something. She was big in fashion at the time, Kenyan fashion, actually African fashion. And she was like, oh my gosh, I love this piece. Could you send it to me? And she was huge on IG. And I was like, yeah, you know, I was so excited. I was like, oh my God. And I made one in her size, wrote something handwritten. And I was like, oh my God, thanks so much. And I sent it to her, and I remember she called me. She was like, you know, you're the only designer I've worked with who's actually sent me something handwritten. And so I'm not going to charge you. I normally charge designers $100 to feature on my IG page, but I'm not going to charge you. And I was like, cool, amazing. And so she featured us. And literally the next day she's like, oh my God, people love this top. Can I get like 10 of them? There's like people who are ready to buy it. And I sent them to her. And in 24 hours, she told me again, we need another 10 like that. And literally that's how Icon started.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just literally started from just scratch, slowly, slowly. And yeah.
What did you do with the other, with the four, you know, 2,000 pieces of clothes that you had?
We literally had them up until last year.
Oh, what were you using them for?
So what we would do is like, we just started looking for any places maybe we could give them away, maybe for some projects. Because the thing is, they were not bad to wear. Which you had them for
8 years.
Yes. There were that many. There were that many. And for me, it's like, yeah, there was no way we were going to sell them because that's not what I wanted the brand to be known for from jump, you know? So they were not horrible to wear. They were just not what I wanted for the brand. And so slowly we started looking for maybe some CSR projects, some women who maybe we wanted to like, you know, make them look cute. Da, da, da. So it just became like something we were giving away over time.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until last year that we actually got rid of the last ones.
Wow.
I used to look at them and they used to torment me for real. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you start scaling up slowly with the fashion design you're working with and people are coming in. And so that's where your new source of money is coming from.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
What's the next big thing that happens? What's the next scale that you go through or that you have?
So I think from there, I remember for about 3-4 years, I was just completely committed to the brand. Completely, you know. I think there's a 2-year period that even passed where I didn't even have a social life. Like I literally just blocked everything out and I just focused on growing the team. So because I knew I had to do production locally, I had to grow my own team, which is not what I wanted, but I was like, it's what we have to do. And so I had to train them myself, at least the first person. I trained the first person and then we got somebody else and we both trained them and like that. And so for 4 years, I literally didn't, there was no money coming to me. There was no, we didn't even make profit for those 4 years.
And so how are you paying the people, even the first couple of people that come in? Are you paying them or are you doing
of
the
course we're paying
equity,
them.
Equity
thing? No. Yeah. So we're paying them. So what I mean is that the brand is able to sustain itself.
Yeah.
But there's no profit, right? So we just have enough to run. There's enough to pay, you know, the workers and everything. And even for me at that time, I literally had like a basic worker salary. I think my salary was like 20K, you know? And so I had no life, even if I wanted a life.
You couldn't afford one.
Yeah, I couldn't afford a life. Yeah. And I'm a bit proud. The last thing I wanted to do was like ask my parents for money. And so I was like, I can make it work. I can make it work. I know I can do it. And so I just like, you know, so for 4 years, really, you know, it was just building. And I think I'd say the 5th year is when we started seeing now the business growing into itself, you know. But I do remember, I think that 4th year, the next thing for me now came in the, because now people started knowing the brand. And people knew the brand before they knew Chris. Right? And so people were like, okay, wow, what's this brand made in Kenya? Da, da, da. And so there started I started getting a lot of interest, people wanting to know sort of like how I did it, how I started, how I did all this. And so I thought, okay, I may have a voice and I might have something to say. I just need somewhere to say it. And so that's how I now started on social media, you know, getting on then. For me, it was just very simple, just sharing like my processes and what I was doing, the team, small things like that. And that's when now I started getting interest from other brands to work with. And I think that's now my next, that was my next step in, you know, money.
Yeah.
because then it became another stream. Right. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Okay, I didn't think I could, but this is nice.
Mm-hmm. So that's now money that was now started to come in as a as an influencer.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
As you're scaling your business, how do you, or what are the things that you took into consideration to scale your salary? Like, what happened that you were like, yeah, I'm going to move from a 20K to whatever it is that you moved to?
Yeah. So for me, what I did is, I think for, I don't even know if I should say this on the video, but, should I say this on the video? No, I shouldn't. Maybe, I don't know. But, in my head, I knew, okay, with this business, I can pay all the bills I need to pay through the business, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't want to earn a profit from the business because then I have to pay tax on it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, okay, let the business pay for everything else, mm-hmm. you know? And mm-hmm. so that's just how my salary increased and increased and increased because mm-hmm. then I'm like, okay, I was still doing the same roles, but I think as the business grew, those roles became a lot more intense. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, I'm the marketer, I'm probably the photographer, I'm the model, I'm this and this, I'm the head designer, I'm HR, I'm what and what. And so I'm like, okay, I'm doing all these roles. Yes, before I was still doing them, but I wasn't getting paid. Mm. But now that the business has more money, actually here's another role. Mm. And so it just started, you know?
Okay.
Because then I started thinking, okay, if I'm gonna actually have employees mm-hmm. who will take up these roles, mm-hmm. what will I give them? How much will they earn? Mm-hmm. And I would just give myself the exact same thing.
And in terms of income that was coming in, what's the turning point for when you start really, you know, I guess getting enough money to be able to sustain yourself? And by that, what I'm asking is, so for example, we had Moav, the photographer, I think when this episode goes out, this would have been 3 or 4 episodes ago.
Yeah.
And he talked about his turning point was he was an agency and becoming the Equity Bank's agency. Mm-hmm. And the amount of money that Equity Bank was paying them was more money than they had seen before. And that was like his turning point. Yeah. So I'm curious for you and in your business, what was the turning point for when you started making inroads towards, I guess, what it is now?
I think honestly for us, our turning point was COVID.
Okay.
Yeah, ours was COVID. And you know, when I started the brand, I was very clear that I wanted it to be an e-commerce brand. Mm-hmm. Okay. I was very, very clear about that because I started even the thrift business that was on Facebook. And yeah. I think that thrift business showed me the potential of e-commerce mm-hmm. because I was able to get women 10 years ago to buy something on Facebook that they've never seen or touched, pay for it in advance, and then get it delivered, you know?
Right.
And so starting Icon, I had a very strong, like very clear vision of the e-commerce mm-hmm. side and digital. And so I knew, okay, with e-commerce there comes content. You need to be able to glue or like rope in your consumer through the gadgets. And so even then, in those first 4 years, I understood like the power of just like short videos, silly pictures, like just like content, you know. And at that time, guys would look at it just like, ah, you know, either you're vain or you're just taking photos of yourself. And it just used to be me with my tripod, you know, in my dad's garage, just like doing videos. And so we did that a lot. And then I think now during COVID, when now everybody was like grounded mm-hmm. and everyone was on their gadgets, mm-hmm. we were all the all watching,
yeah.
you know. And for me, I went to my safe space. At that time when I was panicking, because everyone was a bit in a panic during that time,
yeah.
I just went to what I knew, which is just creating content.
Yeah.
And so that creation of content, honestly, like that period between, I'd say the whole of 2020, the business, I think, grew 4 times, definitely, mm-hmm. just because we focused on our content.
Mm.
And, you know, it even got to a point where now we had to find measures like to still have our staff come in mm. and like space out everybody. There was the whole like sanitizer, but we had to keep working because there was demand for the product.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that's literally, that was our turning point.
Okay. Question, how long does it take you before you start paying VAT for your business?
So they say that you're supposed to you're supposed to have an annual revenue was it like 5M?
5, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's about 5M.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how long does it take you before you start paying VAT?
We already are.
No, I know you are now. I mean, from the beginning, how long did it take?
How long did it take us? Yeah, I think COVID was... the minute the business picked up, COVID time, like, the accountant was like, yeah, we need to... Because at this point now, remember, we're getting now a lot of attention from other third-party stores, third-party websites who want to stalk us because we're the brand that they're seeing all the time.
Yeah.
And so a lot of them, even the documentation needs to include VAT.
Yeah.
And so we couldn't be in a lot of these spaces if we didn't have our VAT documents. And so we just had to do it.
So that, again, so it was around that four, five-year
mark. I'd say, yeah, again. 4-5 year mark.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Interesting. Mm. So I want to ask you a little bit about, I guess, when the influencing money comes in as well.
Yeah.
And what that process is like and what that does for you, I guess.
Yeah.
And your not the business so much, but your personal financial space.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's that impact like? Is it a core revenue stream for you? Or is it still just supplementary and additional?
Yeah. So I think from the beginning... It was interesting because when it happened, to me, it almost felt like free money.
Okay.
The first time that it started coming in, I was like, oh my goodness, what? They just pay me to just like, you know, and just take a picture. Because it's something I'd been doing, you know, for a long time.
Yeah.
I'd been taking pictures and videos for such a long time to where for me, it didn't feel like work.
Mm-hmm.
And so initially it was exciting. I was like, oh my God, this is like free money. And so that, I think, lasted... quite a substantial time, I'd say maybe a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
And then now we started getting more discerning brands. And I think even when we started with the influencing and the content creation, many brands really didn't have like a structure.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was doing it because everyone was doing it, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like, okay, let's just get influencers, throw money at them and da, da, da. So there really wasn't structure on like KPIs and like checking, you know, engagement and things like that. That came a little bit later. And so now when that happened is when it was like, okay, this is a real job. And then you have brands that come in that want to do like trainings and they want a lot more of your time and they want you to be at events and they want you to really understand the product.
Mm-hmm.
Then it became, okay, this is a full-time thing. I can't just take it like a joke, mm-hmm. right? And I remember I did it, I think, and to me, it still was another revenue stream.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say either was bigger than the other. Mm-hmm. I think for me, I just looked at them like, I was getting money from here and from here as well, and they both needed my attention.
Yeah.
And I did it solidly, I'd say, for about maybe 2 years. I'd say, yeah, about 2 years. I did the content creation solid, and, you know, I'd get the gigs and get the money. But I remember there was a time that came in 21
mm-hmm.
and 22.
Mm-hmm.
At that point now, it became too much, right? Because with the brand, with Icon, we were now at the cusp of growth.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could see our consumer was itching for something more. Mm-hmm. And the brand was like, we were not able to meet demand. And so we desperately needed like something to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other side, I had like all these big brands. You know, I had like year-long contracts.
Yeah.
And so I had to make a decision and I just said, look, I'm going to take a break from the content and I'm just going to focus on Icon, grow the brand. And then once we're done, then I'll get back to content.
Yeah.
And so I remember I paused on content creation, I'd say maybe like early mid 22 mm-hmm. and then stopped that for about a year or so.
Mm-hmm.
I've literally just gotten back mm-hmm. like full time, you know what I mean?
Content, yeah. Okay.
Into content. But I took a break for at least a year. And during that year is now when we really, you know, grew the brand. That's around the time when now we opened the newer stores, you know, grew the team by more than double. And it literally required so much of my attention.
Yeah.
And yeah, now I'd say the past 2-3 months, maybe 4, is when I've just gotten back into content.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, what does it take to open a store, especially financially? What are the things that you're required to do or required to think of? What are the things that you've done
when
opening a store?
Okay, so for me, I take it like, you know, essentially if you're going to rent out a house, you know some of the things they require, you know, the deposits and all that.
Mm.
So I look at it like renting out a house, but like on steroids, okay? So yes, they'll want the deposit, but then there's always other expenses.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely you need to have a chunk of money. I usually say, like, if they tell you the rate, the monthly rate you need to pay for this space, just do that times 10. That's the amount you need to pay once to, like, get the store up and running. Actually,
so
no.
If you can give us, like, your practical whatever.
Okay. So I'd say times 10 in terms of, like, the payment that you need to do immediately to whoever you're renting it from, right? So what I'd say is the things you're paying for are deposit, definitely. Some places have goodwill. You know, goodwill is literally money you're never getting back. The deposit, I'd say, it depends on the place, but most places are about 2-3 months.
Okay.
And so you're required to pay the deposit and quarterly rent. So if it's a deposit for 3 months, then you need to pay 6 months rent, right? And then there's the legal fees, which I've never understood, but somehow they're so high, you know, and they never want to budge on them. What other fees are there? Yeah, I think that's basically it. And then, of course, there's now the setup.
So where was your first location?
So our first location was Westgate. Westgate Mall.
And how much did that cost in terms of, like, monthly rent?
I remember the first place. I don't know if I can say the figures, you know, just because of the whatever. But I remember our first spot at Westgate was tiny. It was smaller than this room.
Yeah,
I used to call it our matchbox because it was really tiny and tight. And even then, the price was, like, obnoxious. Like, even now, looking back, I'm just like, that was expensive. You know, but I guess we're paying for the name. But that was a really small store, and I remember even I was so sure we weren't able to afford the rent. I was so sure. Yeah, I was so sure. I remember at the time I was telling my partner, I was like, "Oh my God, we can't do this. I don't know if we'll have this money every month." And he was like, "No, you can. Just you can do it." And I was like, "No, no, no. What if? What if? What if?" You know, and what I liked now about that space is because where the space we were getting was not, we didn't have to, number one, do any fit outs. So all we needed, it was mostly a plug and play, right? So all you needed to bring was, like, your merchandise and your, like, for us, the racks. That was it. And maybe just form, like, a changing room. But we didn't have to do, like, the cladding, walls, lighting. That was already there. That's the one thing I liked about it. The other thing I liked about it was that it wasn't a lease contract, right? And so lease contract, you know, is 6 years. So that one, it can get now hefty with the legal fees and you have to pay all these deposits and all that. So it was slightly cheaper than what we generally would have had to pay or what we've paid in our other stores. But yeah, it was still quite a substantial amount.
Wholesomely, how much would you say, if you were to give us a range of all those things that you've talked about, how much would it did it cost you to put that together?
At that time, okay, how much was it? Do I remember?
Is that another 2 million shilling investment? Is it more?
Let me see. I think if I'd have to give a figure, everything plus fit out, like every, all of
yeah, all the things that you did to get that store ready.
I'd give it maybe like a... 1M to maybe like a 1.2 maybe.
We'll put it together. Okay.
Yeah.
And when now you start that process, do you ever have a month where you're not where the store isn't able to pay for itself?
So that's what I was very worried about. Yeah. But surprisingly, we never had that. And we've never, like, I was shook. Honestly, when I tell you, because I was so into e-commerce, for me, I was just like, there's no way. There's no way retail can make more than e-commerce. And then we go into the store, and the first month, I was like, oh, wow. So my only goal was for the store to pay for itself. I need for you to pay the rent. I need for you to pay the lady who's there. I needed to pay for basically all of the other things we've put. So I'd even calculated that this store needs to pay for all of the investment we've put in within 6 months to a year.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if it's not going to do that, I'm not. You know?
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just by like the third month, it was crazy, you know, at the ROI. I was like, wow. But then I also realized it's because we had such a heavy, or like we were really focused on our digital. So we'd basically send all our people there. And so quickly we realized, okay, this is opening up a store is one of the best ways in a fashion brand for you to acquire new customers.
Okay.
Because then you're gaining the trust of your customer.
Yeah.
Because then they can come to our place, they look, because Kenyans are still not 100% buying online. They still think they're being scammed. They want to make sure the quality is what they see on the thing. And so that was our best way of acquiring new customers, because okay. they'll come to the store, see the products, see that we're legit, and then from there they'll just buy from the website.
Okay.
You know?
I want to talk about your scale from one outlet, well, one store to now three and one outlet, yeah. right, to four.
Yeah.
What's that process like? And the financial element of it, do you require extra capital? Do you yeah. require extra investment? Where does it come from?
Mm-hmm.
What did you need to show? If at all you needed extra investment, what did you need to show for that to be, for them to give you that money?
Yeah. So I remember the one that was, so because we had the Westgate, and then what we did, we had the small store in Westgate, but then we moved now to a bigger space.
In Westgate still.
Still in yeah. Westgate. That was, I think, three times the cost
okay.
of where we were. And then in the same year, so that was earlier in the year. And then now later in the year, we now opened two stores back to back. So honestly, like to this day, I don't know why we did that. And mm-hmm. I feel like we're still... Are we still recovering? I think so. I think we're still recovering a little bit mm-hmm. because that was insane. Because we opened one in November and the other one in DEC.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a big
in
blow.
Different locations.
Different locations. That's a big blow for a small business. Mm-hmm. And for the third one, we had to get assistance. You know, mm-hmm. I think we thought we could handle it because, I mean, our revenue was good, our margins were great, and we thought, okay, if we just like. Put all of the extra in these stores, then I think we'll be okay. But I think halfway into it, and you know now you can't push back because you can't pull back because you have two. You signed the agreements,
yeah.
everything.
Yeah.
And you know, we're getting there like halfway into the thing of doing the setups in both. I'm just like, oh snap, our money is running out, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I quickly had to go to the bank and I was like, oh my God, guys, I need help. And so it was easy anyways because we'd been banking with them.
Mm-hmm.
So for them, they just need to see the history,
mm-hmm.
you know? So for we didn't really need to do much. We just said, look, we're opening up these two stores. We don't have enough money for both. So we need you to chip in Kidogo. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they had our history and, you know, they're like, okay, cool. We can see the money that comes in. And so based on that, they gave us a cap on how much they'd give us.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to take the entire thing because mm-hmm. I knew exactly what we needed.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did it. And then we were able to pay it back within about 6 months after the stores opened.
Yeah.
And yeah, but we definitely needed help. And yeah. I would not do that again.
Yeah.
I think even if it's like having a store in Mars, it's fine. Mm-hmm. I can just do one at a time. We mm-hmm. don't have to do like, you know, the two. That was stressful. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
That was stressful.
And since then, if I was to ask, what's been your, I guess, business financial low point?
Mm.
Since you started opening the store, and I guess seems like...
Low point?
Yeah. What's been the low point? Yeah.
Honestly, can I be honest? Yeah. Like that start, the way I started, where all of my savings...
The 2 million?
Imagine that was yeah. my lowest. Honestly, like...
Since, like to date, you have not...
Nothing like that.
Yeah.
Nothing like that. Like I was about to stop the business before it even started.
You've never been able to pay salaries or take a loan to pay salaries.
No.
Or...
And I've never had a feeling that I'll quit the entire business.
Mm-hmm.
Because you need to realize, you see, this for me, this was literally my dream. Like... Mm-hmm. For me to just put all of my savings into one thing, that was my dream. And so at that time, if there's ever been a time that I've wanted to quit on this dream, it was that time. And I've never had that feeling ever again before. So, yeah. So
okay. As we wrap up, have you invested in anything else?
Yeah,
Yeah. put money in anything else? I mean,
yeah. So yeah. Personally, I just dabble. To be honest, I'm like one of those like scared investors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think whether I like to or not, mm-hmm. whether I like to believe it or not, I think my parents still have a lot of, you know, talking
hold.
In my
yeah.
ear.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the riskiest I've done is like real estate.
Mm-hmm.
But even that, I'm just like, oh my God, you know? And so I just like have somebody handling it and they do the rental or whatever. But every other, like any other money that I have extra, I just put it in savings. Like literally it's in a circle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing, going back to the quote I told you of tumia pesa ikuzoe, I know that's my character. So like I'm very, if I'm not saving from my parents, I'm just like spending. Like, I really don't know how to just, like...
Be in between.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, like, the most mundane things. Mm. You know, I'll just be like, look, I'm feeling like I need to redo my entire, like, house,
mm-hmm.
you know, on a whim. And I'll just go out and spend too much money,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so knowing that, I actually have just a standing amount that leaves my account. Mm-hmm. I actually don't like having too much money, like in my checking account. Mm-hmm. You know, if I have more than 50K, honestly, it's too much. Like, I'm itching. So I just try and keep it at a minimum. Mm-hmm. Literally, I make a joke, and even to make this joke with my friends, it's like, I am the brokest, like, business person you'll ever meet. Mm-hmm. Because for me, I have to function on that brokenness mentality mm-hmm. for me to actually do anything, like, substantial with my money. Mm-hmm. The minute I feel like I have it, mm-hmm. it's going to be spent on nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's just how I survive.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. I have learned, maybe let me ask you one last question.
Yeah.
Around the, because we've talked about, I guess, the retail and the money that you're making on this other side and the production side of things. How difficult has it been to get the exact things that you want, to build the exact team that you want? And how much investment has it taken for you to get that done? I mean, considering the fact that you went to China and everything else, went, so you said you were going to do everything locally. So what's that been like?
That's been really difficult.
And why not go back to, have you ever not considered, or why have you never gone back to the car sales? Because
the car boot sales.
Because the margins on those were insane, no?
They were, yes, they were. But you have to be in a completely different business. So the reason why those did so well was because I was selling products between like 500 and 1500. Mm-hmm. So that worked for the product that I was selling. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't go back there with the Icon brand. Mm-hmm. If I had a chance, and to be honest, like for me, I think I even find it a bit of a hobby. Mm-hmm. And it's funny you mentioned it because that's one of the things I want to get back to doing is even going shopping in the open air markets. Because for me, it's like, it's something I really enjoy and I'm actually good at. Mm-hmm. Now, would I do it as a business? I think it's a little time consuming. Mm-hmm. And then for me, it's a conflict of interest mm-hmm. because then it's like, okay, how do you have a secondhand business and you have a made in Kenya? How mm-hmm. do you know what's what, you know? Mm-hmm. So I just need to have a very clear cut. There was something else you asked.
The production side.
The production. Things, yeah. Oh my gosh, yes. So that is, it's been difficult. I'd even say frustrating at mm-hmm. some points. Mm-hmm. And even now, you know, looking at the team, you know, I'm looking at a team of 40 plus women and I'm like, sometimes I'm at a lack of words because I'm just like, oh my God. And that's what drives me. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, these guys have like families relying on them and stuff. And so I need to make sure I pay their salaries and I cannot like flake. And that's literally what keeps me going. But it's difficult building that team. It's not even perfect. I wouldn't say it's perfect, mm-hmm. but definitely we've come a long way. Mm-hmm. And all I'd say is like for anybody looking to do the same thing, you just need to invest a lot of time. And what saved me is now those early years because those 4 years that I wasn't making much money and I was living in my parents' house, that was the time I just switched off and worked on it, you know. And the minute I had a solid base of 5 women, those were enough to go and like now teach the rest, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know. But definitely, it still needs a lot of attention. You know, now I have people who are in charge of those different departments, but I still have to have a lot of say in it, you know.
Yeah,
and these are guys who are earning salaries, so you need to think of health insurance. It's a lot, it's a lot. So, for real, it's not something that I wanted to do. My strength is in marketing and design, I didn't want to get into production. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's where life got us, and so I just taken a stride.
Okay.
Yeah.
10 years from now, mm-hmm. five, 10 years from now, what is it that you'd like to, I guess, see for yourself? What does success for you look like financially? 5, 10 years from now.
Financially.
Yeah.
Like, for me, I think I'd want I'd want my money to give me safety, mm-hmm. right? So I'm not going to be the person who goes and buys a Lambo, like buy something big. Okay, maybe because I'm not into cars. I'm definitely going to buy like an expensive couch. Mm. But I don't see, for me, money is not about spending it. It's more about the safety. Mm. I would want to have reserves and investments that is easily liquidated in the event of anything. Mm-hmm. Right. So for me, money is about safety. And so 5, 10 years from now, I just want to have like, you know, still 50k in my checking account, mm-hmm. but like in the back it's like, yo,
like 10 million, you know,
more, you know, dollars, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah. So that for me is what I see financially.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was good. That was interesting, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's us. That's Chris Njoki here, Financially Incorrect. I have learned a thing or two about the fashion space and how to scale and how not to scale as well.
Yeah.
And about production in China. I've really enjoyed this episode. I hope you guys have too. Please leave a comment, share, and subscribe if you like this podcast. And we will see you guys on the next episode and get into the holiday spirit. I think we'll be like a week or so into holidays by this point. Yeah. All right.
Happy holidays.